This could be like it's a member of the name of the shop, because
well, this is the one in Ventura.
No, no, this is in Ventura. We organized that one in Ventura. That was during the war. But this was here in Los Angeles. And this Josephine and I worked together, and we finally got the, where, of course, she didn't have to give work to anybody because she was real fast. So she always managed to make $16, $20 a week when I couldn't. Maybe I made $10 or $12, but I didn't care because I was getting paid from the union also. And I had to show that I work every day, because if old lady would sign a card, a little slip, so many blouses, and put the date on it. And so I had to accumulate my little slips, and I had to take them to the union, and I had to take photocopied copies of it, so we had proof. And this way we worked for about a month in the shop. And then when we had enough proof how they were cheating us, and I had a woman that they had to give her back pay over $500, because I got the names of all the people that were getting cheated, and so...
In the meantime, did the women in the shop know that two of you were union organizers? What was
it? They were signing cards, but we had to have enough cards to have a strike or to have an election. In the meantime, the employer got wise, and they moved to Vernon. And, of course, then the union sent me to work in the shop, which was the funniest thing, because everybody knew it, including me and the we had a picket line. And I had to work in the shop because they still didn't know I was from the union, see? And I worked one day to find out how the shop was...
The union started picketing?
Yeah, because...
When they moved?
When they moved, and we already called a strike. But I can't remember the name of the shop. It's funny.
What year would this be?
I don't remember the year. I can't remember.
During the war already? If the NRA was still in effect, it would be...
Well, there was a minimum wage, I don't know, $15 or $16 a week. Anyway, I think it was already during the war, but I'm not sure. Anyhow, they moved to Vernon, and they sent me inside of the shop to work, and I felt so terrible because the girls almost fell all over themselves. How could she go and break a strike? And I pretended, you know, I'm not in the union anymore, because I wanted them to let me go to work. So I worked one day, and I saw what the shop looked like, and how big, and how it was situated, and all that. And then in the evening, I told the girls, "Now, don't be silly." I said, "You don't think I'm going to be a strike breaker?" I said, "I went in because I was sent by the union." So that was it.
Now, the ones who were out on strike were the ones who you've been working with in the shop in Los Angeles. And then when the shop moved...
Then we have a picket line there, yeah. And but we didn't win that strike. We just couldn't win it. In the meantime, I organized another shop in Vernon. I forgot his name. He moved to town later. He was already in union. So he figured if he's going to be in the union, might as well come back to Los Angeles.
So the runaway shops were very common.
Yeah. They always have been. And then they changed their names. Or they sell the shop supposedly, and then the son will get it or somebody else. During the war, I was sent also from the union to a shop in Watts. You remember when the Pachuco, you heard about the Pachuco War and all that? Well, they sent me to organize a shop in Watts, and that was really bad because the Pachucos used to throw stones at the streetcars, at the soldiers, at the marine sailors. And, of course, I go every day from Los Angeles and work there. And I had an awful time to organize that shop. What's his name? It became a union shop later. He had two or three shops, but right now I can't remember his name. And I had an awful time. Finally, I had a girl next to me, and she was the leader of the shop. So I had to make friends with her. And so we talked, and I used to buy them ice cream at lunch and go to shows with them and everything, and nothing seemed to work. So one day we were talking, and so this girl said she has a friend, and she's got a little child, a little girl she wanted to give away. And it's a pretty baby, but she couldn't keep it because she had five or six, I don't know. So I said, "Gee," I said, "that's a good idea. You know something?" I said, "I think I'd like to adopt that baby." And, of course, she takes me to the woman's house and everything. And then I then I'm, of course I have no intention to have opened the bakery. But the next day I came, I said, oh God, I'm so sorry. I said, but my husband don't want to go, you know, because after all. And but we became very good friends, and she finally, somehow, I got her to see it my way, and she started helping me organize the shop.
Now, was she, before, she was just viewed by the others as being...
The leader of the shop, yeah, and she was very anti-union, so were the others. But little by little, we finally got the shop. And when, what the heck was his name? Kirk and Wisman, I think, was it? Kirk and Wisman is the name of the shop. And this was one of his contractors. So anyway, they signed up for the union and came back to town. Then he opened the big shop. And of course, I felt real good about that. And that girl became a real good union girl. And her husband, now this was during the war. So her husband went in the service, and quite a few of the husbands were in the service anyway. And there's quite a few girls, except one of them later became a forelady. And she opened a shop of her own. And she had a union shop for a little while. She was a contractor for Kurt and Whitman, but finally she got out somehow.
Mm.
Then they had a shop in San Diego, also during the war, called Morse and Morse, the beer shop. I don't know if I told you about that one, that they were going to send it to the insane asylum.
Oh, no.
Oh, I didn't tell you that?
No.
So anyway, my husband is home, and my son was already in the Navy, because he volunteered from the beginning. The day he was 17, he volunteered. And my husband is home, and he wanted to go into service, but his boss wouldn't let him because he was foreman, and they were doing some kind of war material. I don't know what it was. So my husband would stay home, and I'd go to San Diego. And I was always looking out for the union. See, I wasn't like they are now, you know, where they go to the best hotels and the best food, because I always thought, gee, my union can't afford it. So I got myself a room in a kind of a cheap hotel, and I went to work in the factory. So they looked at me, you know, no matter how I tried, I was young, I wasn't so bad looking, and I guess you can't wear torn clothes and all that. So I came in the shop, and they looked at me, and what do you want? I said, well, I need a job. My husband is in the Navy, and he comes to San Diego all the time, and I became really good at making up stories. And I said, and I made friends with a girl that was a cripple, the first one. So anyway, they gave me a job, but because I was an American, supposedly, they paid me 80 cents an hour. They paid us by the hour. And the Mexicans, they came across the line every day. They were getting 43 cents or whatever, 53 cents. And now this was the wages. And so it was a big shop, over 100 people. They're making brassieres, and I have never worked on brassieres. And of course, every Friday I'd come home, and my husband would be alone every week. And most of the time I'd find him dead drunk when I'd come home. So he didn't like the idea for me to work in San Diego, but I was making so much inroads in it that I just had to do it. So I got this cripple girl to help me, and we started getting people to sign up to lay. Oh, it was over 100 cars already. And the shop was big, maybe 160, 70. Anyway, I didn't have enough yet. In the meantime, you know, little by little, they start hearing, yeah, you know, there's somebody from the union here, and they didn't know, because I was just a little dummy when they asked me something, and I just didn't know any better. I was there because my husband was in the Navy. So I used to have my meetings on the Mexican side, see? And all the Mexicans, of course, they weren't going to come and tell the shop that they were meeting with the...
No, most of the workers in the shop were coming across?
Yeah, every day. But see, in those days, it wasn't illegal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a car and you came back and forth. And so I used to have tamale parties, and I used to have all kinds of parties in Mexico, and the union paid for it because I always had to have a deal. I take the girls to a show in San Diego, and they pay for it. They pay for my hotel room, my fare to back and forth, plus my wages. And I was getting 80 cents an hour. I don't remember how much it amounted to, because we worked sometimes 5 days, sometimes 6 days a week. And then finally, when I figured the thing is getting, you know, I already had the Mexicans, but now I need the Americans. The American girl was helping me. She was crippled, and she started helping with the Americans. So finally I said, well, the day is here to get them in a group. And Harry stopped and leave, and I kept asking them, please send me some help because the shop is ready. But I didn't get the help. So one day I called a meeting and I invited them to a Chinese restaurant. And of course somebody went and told the forelady. So the forelady came over and she says, girls, I understand there's going to be a meeting or a dinner in a Chinese restaurant and there's some troublemaker in here. So I hope you don't. So she comes to me and she says, well, I hear there's going to be a meeting tonight and I hope you're not dumb enough to go. You know, and I looked at the forelady and I said, and I didn't know what to do. So I said, you know, I said, it's funny. I said, but I happen to be over 21 years old. You know, there's a saying, I'm white, 21 and free. And I said, and if I feel like going to that meeting, I'm going. And I said, now that you tell me about it, I think I will go. You know, pretending like I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, but did the other women in the shop at this point, the American women,
some of them did. Some of them still didn't know who it was because I had this other girl helping me. See, the Mexicans I wasn't afraid of. I knew they weren't going to tell on me. So finally we called the meeting and the dinner at the and three of us showed up. Myself and the crippled girl and one more. Oh, golly. Yeah, they were scared. See, the poor lady went around and scared them. So the next day,
how many were you hoping would come?
Oh, I hope about 30 or 40 or something like that. So the next day, though they made a speech and they said that there was a meeting and what we're going to have now is elections in the shop. And they bring and they put all these little slips on the machines and to vote. And I keep calling Los Angeles for help and no help comes because they didn't have it. Or
what kind of help?
Well, I needed people to help me, you know, like if there's a strike, to pull the strike or to help me organize or if we get arrested. And Harry Scott was very busy, and I don't know why, but they didn't send anybody. So I go into work, and they put this little card on the machine's vote. So I figured, well, hell with it, I have to do something. So I jump on the machine. And I said, you know, I said, people, I said, I am the troublemaker. You should have seen that poor lady's face. I'd love to have a picture of it. And she says to me, so you're the one. And she says, don't you listen to her. And I turn around, I says, yes, girl. I pulled my union book and I said, I'm from the union. And I says, and don't vote. I says, because this is not legal. If we're going to have an election, I said, should be a representative from the government here. And I said, and the union should be notified. And I said, we have a real election. No, this is no election. I said, this is nothing. And, of course, the boss comes running over me and says, get off my machine. Well, you know, that was one thing I wasn't supposed to do. You know, I knew that, but I had to do something. So anyway, I jumped off the machine, and the boss says, well, he says, you're fired. He says, you're a troublemaker. So he takes me in the office. And
how
I said,
long have you been there at this point?
Oh, maybe a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back and forth. And so anyway, I go in the office, and the boss got my check. So I still, and I still, you know, very calm and laughing. See, I used to laugh a lot, and this would kill them because they couldn't upset me. And that was a good old day before I got nervous. So anyway, I said, you know, I said, you're making a mistake. You can't fire me. What do you mean? He says, I can't fire you. You can't. I said, because the labor board, we have a law saying that we're free to organize if we want. I said, and if you don't believe it, I said, you call up your lawyer. So he called up his lawyer, and the lawyer must have told him not to fire me, because he says, all right, he says, go back to work. So I went back to work, but by the time he had been talking to me, he kept me there a long time, and,
I can hear that. You got me later?
While I'm talking in the office, they had changed my machine. They took my machine where it was and they put it in the corner of the office, of the factory. It was a great big building. They put me all in the corner, and then they got one of the carpenters to come and put boards like this. One in here and one in here. And there's the wall, two walls. Yeah. And then I tell you, I got so scared. My knees were just going like this. But I'm laughing. But they didn't know that I was ready. Just as they touched me, I was going to start crying. And I laughed and I turned around and I said, well, I said, so now you're going to lock me in here. And I said to the carpenter, if anything happens to me, remember, I said, you're going to be responsible. So he says, lady, I'm not going to, because I thought you were going to put nails in the boards. No, he says, I'm just putting the boards, you know, the cutting boards that they have. And of course, my machine was put on wrong and I couldn't sew. But whatever I did was wrong. And then I get out, my head out, it was in the afternoon, and I stick my head out and I say, yoo-hoo! I'm in the gym house now. And everybody would start laughing in the shop and they couldn't work. But anyway, I spent the whole day in the shop, and when I was going, scared to death. But anyway,
what,
they did.
What did you think that happened?
Well, I didn't know. You know, after all, there were so many. Oh, while I was making a speech, one colored came out against the union. And he told me that the union was no good, that that's not true, that if they got the union there, the bread would raise and the food would go up. And so we wouldn't be gaining anything by joining the union. And there was an English woman, I'll never forget, because she would come in at me and I thought she'd hit me. And she said, we don't want no union here. That was before I was pulled off the machine. So the next morning, when
so you were actually physically afraid.
Yeah, I was. Yes. So, and then I called up Los Angeles and I told them, I said, send somebody because, and I told them what's happened. Yeah, we'll send somebody. Well, I'm waiting. But anyway, the next morning I go to work and it's 10 minutes to 8 and we start at 8. So the boss comes out and mad as a hornet, I guess by this time he decided something else. So he says, you go and finish your work and get out of here. So I turn around and I said, oh, he's smiling again. I said, you can't. I said, first place, I can't go into work when it is 8 o'clock because I have to punch my card. But I don't want you to punch, go in and work. I said, well, I'll tell you, but suppose I go in and work. And if I stick a needle in my hand while I'm sewing, how can I prove it that I'm working, you know? And that's all I needed to say because this English woman jumped and she said, do you hear what she said? She said she's going to sew her hand on the machine. And they started there, big, the rumpus, you know, that this crazy woman, she wants to sew her hand. The poor boss is going to sue them later. Called the she's crazy, sent for the somebody from the insane asylum. Well, that's the only time in my life I was petrified. I was speechless. Because I didn't know what, you know, if Los Angeles would send somebody, I wouldn't care. But I figured, if they take me in the insane asylum, when are they going to find out in Los Angeles?
What was, during all of this, what was happening with the Mexican workers? Did they understand what was
happening? They understood that they were so scared because they didn't want to lose their jobs. And even my American friend, the cripple, she didn't say a word either because she also was afraid. And so anyway, they let me finish my work. And then they says, come in the office and get your pay. And I didn't want to leave, so you know what, I refused to pay my check. Because I said, they said I quit. And I said, I didn't quit. So they called the police. Well, I figured going to the insane asylum and going to the jail is much better to go to jail, you know. So then when I saw policemen, I hated them like Dickens. When I saw policemen, I was so relieved to think that here's one at least is not going to hurt me. So I told him, I said, you know, I said, I'm not, oh, they told him I was crazy and I was trying to show my hand and they didn't say anything about the union. So I said, you know, officer, I said, I'm not crazy. I said, what's wrong with me? I said, I'm a union organizer. And he said, oh, that's what you are. And he was for the union too. See?
So the police in San Diego were organized?
At least, I don't know if they were, but this particular policeman was for the union. Oh, he says, so I understand. So he says, well, what you should go is go to the labor board. And I says, I intend to do that right away. So the policeman says, well, lady, he says, I can't stay here all day taking care of you. So he says, you might as well take your pay and go because the mice, you know, I was really in danger then, because they were really like, I don't know, like a riot or something. And so I took my pay and I told the officer, I said, well, remember, if something comes up, you're the one that told me to take my check. And I left. And I just left, oh, about maybe 20 paces from the factory when he went his way and I went mine. And then I got the shakes and I got hysterical. And I shook and cried and everything until I got to my hotel. And I'm screaming at the top of my voice when I opened the door of my room, because I really lost my head. I mean, I got so scared. And who's sitting in my room but my mother? And I said, Ma, I said, what are you doing here? She says, what's the matter with you? I must have looked awful. And she said, why are you crying? And I said, well, then I told her what happened. Oh, daughter, please, sister, quit this job, please. There must be something else you can do.
Did she come to Montana?
No, she was living already in Los Angeles, but she came to visit me in San Diego. So I said, I don't know what I called. Oh, yes, and I went to the labor board, and I told them, and they were very sympathetic, and they thought one of them even got up and shook hands with me, because she thought that was really take guts or something like that, he said. And but then I called Los Angeles and nobody showed up. And then, of course, I went back with my mother and I came to your race hell. I said, you leave me to the wolves over there. Nobody wants to come over. We couldn't find anybody to go over and help you. So I dropped there. But they didn't drop the shop.
Well, why do you think that there was so much trouble trying to get assistance from
us? We didn't have enough organizers. And I can't tell you to this day what was the reason. I only know that I needed help and I didn't get it.
Well, did you feel that they were sabotaging your efforts?
No, I never thought. I mean, never thought of that. I just thought, well, they're too busy. They don't care. I mean, they just don't care. So, but anyway, this Scott and I, we kept on going to San Diego, and there was an amalgamated shop in San Diego that kind of was going to help us. So finally, I used to go to every week. No matter of rain or shine, I was there with my leaflet. And the girls would say, more power to you. We never saw anybody. Because, you know, I guess it just takes some nerve to do it. Because I don't think I could do it now. But in those days, I'd go worse than that if I had to. So anyway, we kept on after. And we finally got the shop where we had an election and won the election.
What was the vote? Did you call?
No, it was pretty good for the union. But what does he do? As usual, he closes the shop. And there's another heartbreak for me. So this crippled girl, she had one leg about this much shorter than the other, and that was the way she made her living. And, of course, she was left out of a job, and that made me sick. And, of course, all those Mexicans that had worked with me came across the line, then they had to go back, or God knows what happened to them. We couldn't do anything for them because we didn't have a shop in San Diego. So we lost, we didn't lose the strike, but he came to Los Angeles. And he closed the shop, and of course, he had a shop here in Los Angeles under his brother's name. And of course, we couldn't get that one. We could never get that one. We tried to organize that one too, and we couldn't. So,
what would happen in terms of when you were trying to organize, isn't one of the fears that a lot of the women would have would be that once they were in the union, the shop would be closed and they would be out of the job?
Well, this is the thing that we had to fight the most. Now, in town, it wasn't so bad because we always had promises, if you lose your job here, we'll get your job somewhere else, which is true, we did. But in San Diego, we didn't have any other shops. Now, the shop here in East Los Angeles was people that live in the neighborhood, housewives that didn't go downtown. And those are the people that I felt real bad, see. Downtown, we always managed, at least I did. I mean, I did my damnest to those that were hard to accommodate. You know, I would get them jobs somehow.
So you saw that as part of your obligation to the people who were organizing. But in San Diego, there was no way.
There was no way. Some of them later got a job in the Amalgamated working in men's clothing, but we didn't do it. I mean, I didn't do it. Scott had more to do with the Amalgamated Union and helped some people.
Well, would that, did these people, for instance, personally resent you as a result of this, the women in the
only time,
stuff?
No, I don't think so. The only ones that I do remember resented it very much was the girls from East Los Angeles. Because I had told them, I mean, I was so sure that we'd get jobs for everybody. And one woman was real nasty. I mean, nobody ever threatened to hit me or anything, but they would insult and say, see, you promised me a job, and I don't care if I was making 6 cents an hour, but I was close to my house, and things like that. These are the things that hurt me more than anything else. So then, of course, by the way, in all this time that I was working in San Diego, I was already a business agent. See? But they had to, in the meantime, somebody else was doing my work here. And
now, do you think employers have some sort of organization so that the word would get out who you were? For instance, when you would come down to San Diego.
Yeah, well, see, maybe they did later, but see, I did it very quietly at first, you know. I even talked against the union in some places. You know, I'd say, like, one woman one time came to me. That was in Los Angeles, 20th century. And she says to me, well, that's funny. She says, but I could swear that I've seen you on the picket line. And I say, yeah. I said, but you have no idea what happened to me. And I say, yeah, you know, I work in a union shop, and I was fired, and the union didn't do anything for me, so I have to work. You know, I have to lie, just deliberately, you know. By the way, also in this 20th century, I had the whole shop organized. And who do you think gave me out, gave me away? A Yugoslav woman. And I was so sure of her that I could have cut my hand for that she wouldn't do it. But the craziest thing that happened, she went to the union. She was willing to belong to the union. And she wanted the union book. And they refused her one. They told her the shop is not organized yet. I mean, they didn't do it for minutes, but she couldn't understand. They told her, when the shop is all union, you're going free and you don't have to belong to the union now. Well, she took it as an insult or an affront or whatever it was, and she turned against the union. And she went directly to the boss and told him who I was and who the leaders were in the shop that were helping me and everything. So he called me in his office. And he says to me, he says, so you told me that because I had told him that my husband didn't want me to belong to the union, because he says, you know, you're a union woman. And I said, I'll tell you the truth. I said, my heart is in the union. I said, but I'm married and I love my husband very much. And my husband don't want me to belong to the union, so this is the way to prove it to him. And you know what he says to me? A leper never changes his spots. So, of course, when he fired me, I'm telling you, if he could tear me apart, I guess he would. We pulled a strike on that shop.
When was that?
That was after the war, because my husband was already back home. I don't know exactly what year it was, but anyway, we had a strike and lost it. And he used to come out with a gun and threaten the girls. And in that strike, I was so mad because, you know, to think that one Yugoslav would turn me in is what killed me more than anything else. And all the Yugoslavs were supposed to be for the union, and half of them that were talking, they were communists or sympathizers. And I say, how come this woman is working for the war effort, and here she is against the union? So I made it my business to be there. We used to have picket lines, 500 people sometimes. And one time Scotty came over and he asked for a volunteer. We had strike breakers, and they put them in rugs. You know, they roll the rugs like this, and they put the woman inside of the rug, and they come in a truck. And because we couldn't find out how they were coming in.
Oh,
yeah. So Scott says to me, what are we going to do? He says that we have to stop them somehow. We used to beat them up, and they used to beat us up and tear their clothes and everything, and nothing helped. His gun didn't help either. The more he got nasty, the nastier we got. So when this truck was coming in, we're going to fix them. And among them was one woman by the name of Maria Luisa. That was the mother of Napoleon, the guy that I told you, the one technique. I knew all this from before, see, but she was very pretty. She had blue eyes, and she was a Cuban. And she had this son. She wasn't married, see. So she used to pass him as a nephew. But anyway, this didn't bother me what I wanted to get her, because if we could get her, then we could win, because she was the leader in her shop. Not in the shop that I was working, but another shop in the same building, and we had the whole building on strike by this time.
How many shops were in the
building? Oh, God knows, maybe 15 or so.
This was on Broadway?
This was on Los Angeles Street, on 7th and Los Angeles. Mm. So, how are they going to stop the truck? And of course, this damn fool, again, volunteers, and I said, well, I said, I'll do it. I'll stay in front of the truck. So Scotty says, all right, we have to do it in a way so you don't get hurt. So we have this great picket line, you know, and when the truck comes, they're going to start some kind of a commotion, and I'm going to be pushed, and I'm going to fall under the truck. Well, by this time, you know, with all my bravery, my knees started going like this, and I was getting stomach ache and everything. But I figured, well, I said I was going to do it, and I'm going to do it. So here comes Scotty running across the street, and he says, Anita, wait, Anita, wait. So I said, what's the matter? He says, we changed your mind. He says, it's too dangerous. You know, the truck might run over you, so we're not going to do it. So they didn't do it. So we didn't get the two shops that we were most interested in, which was the 20th Century and Letty Lee. Letty Lee was a very expensive line of dresses. We never did get those two shops in the union. And there was really some real fighting in those shops. For instance, in this 20th century, the day that we called the strike, I figured, well, we're going to get everybody. We have the majority. And a sample maker is coming. She's a little Mexican girl, much smaller than I was. So I stopped her. And I start talking real nice to her. I says, look, I says, we have everybody almost on strike. Even if I didn't, I used to say this. So I says, why don't you join the group of strikers? We're all trying to better our conditions and all this. And boy, she didn't answer me. She just gives me one big sock right here, and down I go. And of course, she must hit me very hard because I have two blue eyes, black eyes. And there's a policeman in the corner. So I went to the policeman and I said, why don't you arrest her? You saw that she hit me. And he says, well, I also saw that you stopped her to talk to her. You had no business talking to her. So I couldn't do anything. Anyway, then I went home, and of course, by this time I had two black eyes. That's all I had. And my husband said, what's the matter to you? What's happened to you? And I said, well, honey, you told me not to fight in the strikes. And I said, so I was talking to her and she hit me. And I said, well, because he always just said not to get involved because his family would die if they saw my picture in the paper or something. Yeah. So I said, and of course I was acting innocent because when I could, I didn't do what he told me. But I told him, honey, you told me not to fight. So he says, well, I didn't tell you to get a beating and not to defend yourself. I said, okay then. So the next morning I went after her because I knew where she lived. And she got the beating of her life. But neither one were, she didn't arrest me, and I didn't arrest her. So, but we didn't get strike. So some women were crazy about me, and some of them hated me like poison.
Well, how about, the non-Spanish speaking women? Were you able to relate to them fairly well?
I did too, but not as good as with the Spanish. So I knew it was mostly loss of time. So we kind of divided it. Now that they had a Russian woman one time, they thought I could organize.
Now, I guess it was in Rose Cafe's book, she talked about the Russian Moroccans beginning to work in the shop. Was she one of those Moroccan women?
You mean the Russian?
The Russian
women? I don't know what she could have been. I don't know. But I thought I could speak her language, and I don't speak Russian. And, you know, you have to speak a little more than a few words to be able to make them understand. So I went there. This was many years later, by the way. And they asked me to go. Maybe I could help. And even I couldn't do anything with her. We didn't get her in the union. But mostly my work was with the Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get the Negroes. Now, I had a very good friend. Her name was Dorothy Reed. A Negro girl. That girl would have gone to hell for me, and I would have done the same for her. And I got her in the union, and Then she also got the job as an organizer. And she worked in the office for a while, and then later on they started sending her to the shop to do the same thing. And she would go into a shop and bring me a whole shop. And usually she'd go to where there's mostly needed. Mm-hmm. And so they hired her in the union. But then she
was
got
was she
picked.
One of the first black women organizers?
Yeah.
Now, this is still local 96?
By this time, no, we already had a local 266 sports where we divided the union. See, that's where I lost kind of touch with 96, because the dressmakers had their own headquarters in one place, and the sports were local went to another place, and the clockmakers were in another place.
Well, that's, in fact, I wanted to trace that. You jumped ahead, but that's all right. Because now, when you first became involved, it was local 96.
Well, when I first became involved, it was local 65, the clockmakers. They didn't have a local 96.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started organizing 96, by the way, my name is the first name on the charter, because I was one of the first, you know, you need seven names to get the charter. And my name at the time was Anita Andrade. That was my second husband's name. So, of course, being that I had two A's, my name is the first one on the charter. And then later on, when we had this general strike and we had the sportswear workers, then they separated them and they made local 266. And
that was in 38 then?
No. It must have been, you know, I think it must have been in 38, I don't know.
Well,
I don't remember the years. I don't remember. I don't know why it just kind of didn't doesn't register. But I know local 266 was formed after 38. Must have been after 38.
As far as I could gather, it was about 37 or 8.
Oh, maybe it was 38 then. But I was already married to Oscar, and I married him in January. That's why I think. It was maybe it was in the later part of 38 or maybe 30, beginning of 39. 38 it must have been.
So you went with 266.
I went. They sent me with 266, and then Rose Pesota was there because she came back. I mean, she had gone and came back, and Levy was the vice president, and Rose Pesota and Levy didn't get along. Why I don't know. You know, I didn't never belong to the clique, so I never knew what was going on among them.
Who was the clique?
Well, it was a little group of Jewish people at that time. And whatever they said, whatever New York said, and I don't know, I just then came to the meetings and I was told what to do. And I was the only, let's see, then they had a Mexican organizer, this Josephine, that I told you. She died. She opened the shop later and she was going to stab me, but that's a long story later. So Josephine was the organizer and myself. And Mary Donovan was another one. She's an American, very pretty girl. And Sue Adams came later.
And these were all 266?
No, we were in 96, and then where we were divided, like, you know.
Oh, during that
Yeah.
Part.
So I think Sue Adams went with 266, because later on they started the lingerie locally. It was 482, and Sue Adams became the manager.
Mm.
And Mary Donovan, she went and married one of the colors, and she dropped out as an organizer. And,
well, you started talking about this. Did you see outside of this clique? This group is running the union?
Yeah. This I knew all the time, but there's nothing I could do, and I didn't even bother, because I figured, why do the impossible? You know, I first place, I always kind of felt a little bad because my English wasn't very good, see? And so I figured then I always thought that they knew more than I did, whether they did or not, I don't know, but this was my impression. So I did my work and I was satisfied, and if I wasn't, I didn't say anything because there's nothing I could do about it.
Well, I mean, did you think that there was a one of the things I wanted to ask was,
the Spanish speaking.
Between Spanish speaking and the Jewish workers.
Yes.
Because it seems about evenly divided, they're the ones who have the power.
That's why we couldn't organize the Mexicans later. I can't put my finger on it, how to explain it, but see, we were getting the Mexicans in by droves, and they had promised them a local. Now, I wasn't present when they promised them that they were going to hire a local of their own, but they were promised a local. And then later on they said no, because they gave all kinds of reasons, it didn't work out, and the only reason they had an Italian local in New York, because that's how it started with the union, and I don't know what else. So the Mexicans then, when they saw they were not going to get the local, they kind of backed off, you know. Mm-hmm. Even the men, they were not so active as they were before. And we had quite a few men very active. We had one, Tommy Talavera, that he became a labor commissioner later, worked for the labor board, and quite a few others. And of course, they figured they just keep, you know, promising, and they do anything, and the Jews are getting all the good jobs, because this, I'm not anti-Jewish, but it was a clique of, I know there's some Jewish people that could hardly write. And they were either business agents or they had some kind of a job in the union. And I used to wonder lots of times, how did they get that way? Then, of course, when they say, well, they all came from the ranks, I figure, well, they must have done something great for the union, and that's how they're working in the union. Like, for instance, one time we were arrested, and there were seven of us. This was a bit, now I'm going back again to the beginning. They were arrested for giving out leaflets. And I was in a committee for the financial committee. I didn't know a damn thing about it, but anyway, somehow I was in the committee. One day I'm looking at the vouchers, you know, and I see a rose, I forgot her name, somebody by the name of Rose, and one was Anna Berg and Claudia Benko. And they were all Russians. I don't know whether they were Jews. At the time, I didn't even separate them. And they were all, you know, they had a voucher for $7 or $8. And so I went to ask, how come that they're getting vouchers? They're getting paid for something. So they told me, well, you know, they were in jail and they lost time. So I looked and I said, well, that's funny. I said, I was in jail with them. How come I didn't get paid? You didn't ask. So I said, well, I didn't know you get paid. And I thought we were all volunteers, you know, and I was giving. No wonder I was so broke sometimes I couldn't even afford a car fare. So then, from then on, of course, when I was arrested, I got paid, but I had to find out the hard way.